Today on our show, we've got a very interesting man who knows everything about tyres. Let's all welcome Lee Parker. So I want to give you congratulations on your achievements at the boot camp. That's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks.
Yeah, because I remember when I first achieved that sort of result, when I first got there, it's such a good feeling.
And
it's
everyone's sort of been complimenting on the changes and whatnot, and yeah. I don't really notice it. So yeah, we took the photos this morning, and yeah, now you see it when you compare the two. It's awesome.
Makes you feel better, doesn't it? Makes you feel really good.
Yeah, that's it. So spoke to Anthony through the week about re-upping. So we'll go around again. I guess I'll sort of generalize most things, and then, you know, I guess specifically get into to mobile tire shop. But country kid, I was born up in Swan Hill, up on the Murray River. Got a small family, mum, dad, my sister. Lived there for a few years. Moved down to Cranbourne when I was six. So I've been here basically my whole life.
Wow.
Went through school, was fine academically. Knew most of the way through high school that I had no intention of going to university or doing any further studies or anything like that. I wanted to work and make money. Spent a fair few years working for a company called Truckline, who were a subsidiary of Iveco Trucking. Did a lot of spare parts, retail sales, showcase, that sort of thing. And we also had a mechanics warehouse as well. So we did servicing on the trucks and, you know, repairs and that sort of stuff.
What did you do there, Lee?
So I was running the showroom, so basically stocking it. I was a junior staff member there. I did my work experience from high school through there, and I basically went in there straight from high school. So I was just stocking the showroom, meeting the customers, getting a bit of an idea for what they, you know, when I left my last job, I'd sort of hit, I guess, a bit of a wall in terms of what I could do over there. You know, the company was getting bigger, but, you know, it didn't need me doing what I was doing in terms of, you know, managing a team and that sort of thing. It was all very autonomous, because that was almost wholly online, and it was dealing with real estate agents and all of that sort of stuff. And they were all trained up and everyone knew what they were doing, and there wasn't sort of much growth left for me. And yeah, so I was looking around and came here and had a bit of a sit down chat with Paul Williams and with Travis about, you know, what they wanted and what I could do and what we were looking for. And it's only, you know, it's grown from there. And, you know, my specific roles changed a couple of times. You know, I came in working, just doing over the phone sales, you know, following up inquiries. Someone said, hey, I want a quote. What can you do for me? That sort of thing. You know, and it's gone from that for me. Now I'm managing 8 people. We've just started up a full-time fleet coordinator as well.
So what's your actual title? What do you actually do there, Lee?
So I'm the national logistics team leader. Oh, wow. So in terms of the company structure, you've got Travis Osborne's the CEO, and he's the be all end all, final say on everything. He's the boss. It's his baby, his idea. It was him and one guy in a van started the company. And now it's massive and huge and national. Underneath him is my manager, Paul Williams, who is the general manager of operations. So he oversees the logistics and booking team and our operations team. So making sure that the vans are all fully equipped, they're all serviced properly, that the technicians are all fully trained up, that they've got all the equipment that they need, you know, any OH&S concerns, all of that sort of stuff are taken care of and dealt with on that side of it. And then with my team and the guys that I run, which is our bookings team. So you go on the website and you make a booking, you pick a day and you get given a window of time. So it might be, say, between 8 a.m. and 11 a.m. It's then up to us to coordinate collection of the tires, either from our stock or from the supplier's warehouse. Which technician is going to be doing that? Is that same technician then going to be the one that's fitting the tires, or is he going to deliver those tires to a different van at some point somewhere? How do we coordinate all of those moving parts to make sure that, you know, you're still getting the job when you want it done? How do we discuss and deal with customers where potentially the tires aren't available? That's more sort of an increasing problem that we have. especially with a lot of the production through Southeast Asia being shut down with COVID at the moment.
Is that where most tires are made?
Almost every brand is exclusively through Southeast Asia.
That's crazy, isn't it?
You do get the occasional customer call up and say, look, I don't want any, you know, Chinese bullshit tires. And we go, well, yeah, that's fine, because these ones are made in Korea, or these are made in Thailand, or something like that.
And what do they say
then? usually it's a bit of a laugh, but we just explain to them that, you know, like, these are, you know, multi-billion dollar global brands. You know, they're gonna take their manufacturing where it's most economic for them. They've still got reputations to uphold in terms of quality of product and quality of performance. So, you know, while there is a bit of a stigma of, you know, something's made in China, so it must be no good. You know, I can tell you, if the Bridgestone factory in China has got a problem, the people running Bridgestone are going to sort it out pretty quick, because if their tires aren't living up to their reputation, then, you know, that's a bigger problem for them than spending a couple of extra dollars to get it fixed. So we've got accounts with Hertz, with Europcar rentals, Flexicar rentals, that sort of stuff. So in the last few months, we've just put on a couple of people full time just to manage those accounts. Wow. And make sure that we keep those coordinated. We've done a bit of work with Simon Lethlean. When he was at the AFL, and now he's at the general manager of football operations at the St Kilda Football Club. So we do routine inspections down there as well. We're looking at, we've been talking to and looking at doing work potentially for a few other sort of major sports clubs as well. You know, the question of sponsorship always comes up, and that's and that's probably a good question for Travis. Because, you know, there is a market there in terms of how we get our brand out and how we sort of make more people aware of it. And, those, you know, me coming on here and just knowing you personally and being able to, I guess, talk about what we do is fantastic. And obviously the way it ties in with what you're trying to do is brilliant. In terms of, you know, how Mobile Tyre Shop's growing, that's a good question and a good avenue to talk to Travis about. You know, I spoke early on about finding a job that you love. This is a job that I genuinely love.
Well, that's fantastic. Yeah, that's the best way to work. I mean, you do your gym in the morning from work as well, don't you?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, normally down in the either in the break room or out in the warehouse, and jump on the Zoom meeting with the.
You enjoying it? The Zoom stuff that we're doing? I think it's.
I love it, man. I didn't think that I would. I was really worried that not having. And my biggest worry when we, you know, when the whole COVID thing kicked off and we weren't going to be able to train in person, my biggest worry was about staying motivated, because I was worried that without, without Anthony and without you guys, especially you personally along the way, without having you guys physically there to say, you know, come on, Lee, keep going, one more.
Well, that's what we're there for, Lee.
That's it. And I was genuinely worried that without that sort of engagement that it just wasn't going to happen and it wasn't going to work. And I'd spoken to Anthony about that a couple of times. I'd said to him, look, I don't know if this is going to work. I might put the membership on hold, or, you know, what can you do about a refund and all that sort of stuff, because I don't like the idea and that sort of thing. And he said, look, give me 2 weeks of it. And, you know, if you're not happy, we'll put it on hold. We'll wait till we're back in the gym, all that sort of stuff. Okay, cool. And I don't think Anthony's said this. the week just gone, I was doing two-a-days. So I was doing the morning session and the night session.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
That is brilliant. So Mobile Tyre Shop is what it says it is. It's a tyre shop that comes to you. We do everything that a tyre shop can do, but we do it in your driveway or at the office in the convenience of, you know, your life. The CEO there, Travis Osborne, who I'm sure you'll have on and you'll have a chat with him, he saw this in the European market. It's a very, very big market over there. He's got the numbers and that sort of stuff, and I'm sure he'll go over that with you. Yeah. I don't know the figures off the top of my head. But he saw this market over there that just did not exist in Australia, and brought it back. He went on Shark Tank, was successful in negotiating a deal in Shark Tank, which you can, if you jump on Google and look that
up.
Yeah, that's it. So that's what we do. If you're looking for tyres, you're looking for a balance and a rotation, you want someone to do a safety check, whatever it is in terms of, you know, the tyres and the drivability of your car, we come and do it for you. And that way you're not left in a situation of dropping the car off at, you know, first thing in the morning at the tyre shop and waiting for someone to give you a ring when they get around to getting it done. You know, you book in with us, you get a time given, we arrive, we do the job and we leave and you just get on with your day.
Pretty good. Is it primarily cars, or do you do motorbikes and trucks, or little, you know, small trucks or any, or bigger trucks?
Yeah, good question. So at the moment, we don't service motorcycles. They require specialised equipment. Obviously, given everything has to fit in the back of the van, we have to be a little bit choosy about what we can and can't do. We need to make sure that we've got enough room for the technicians to safely move around, as opposed to having different machines in there for fitting. So we do all passenger vehicles, trailers, that sort of thing. We can do a lot of light trucks. The only caveats with trucking are we can't do anything more than about 4 ton, just because it would require another set of loading jacks, which takes up more room in the van. And again, we want to try and create a workspace for these guys, not just kind of pack everything in. And we can't do anything with a split rim. And the reason we can't do that is because a split rim fitting requires the use of a safety cage, which we can't produce mobile as yet. I believe it's something that is being looked into and researched, but it's just something that's not available in terms of the technology at this stage.
What if someone called you up just to check their tyres? Do you do yep. that sort of thing? You do?
Yeah, absolutely. If people have got concerns about tyre pressure, wear and tear, tyre safety, all of that sort of stuff, we're more than happy to come and have a look. We'll check it out. We do a full safety inspection of your tyre, the tread depth. We'll have a look at the wear and see if maybe there's an alignment or a balancing issue potentially. Re-air them, rotate them as needed, let you know if anything needs to be replaced, quote you up on replacement, and then it's up to you whether you go ahead with a purchase from there or whether we just leave it at the service for that day.
Is it mainly done through the phone, or is it person to person, like you come down and have a look at the car or the van or whatever, and then make the judgment call? Or like tyres, how do you recommend tyres? How do you say this tyre above that tyre? This isn't going to be showcased, but I know working for other companies, like I've worked in retail before, used to manage in duty free and that sort of stuff. And I know there were a lot of kickbacks for certain companies like Panasonic one of the big companies, Canon or Pulse or someone would give you a kickback if you sold that particular type. Would you work on that principle, or you're trying still just to get the best for the customer in the sense like, I mean, there's probably a balance of both, but you know?
Yeah, there is. There is a balance of both. There's two separate areas there, I guess. The first port of call is our website. So if you jump on Mo.au, we pass on all the promotions that the major suppliers give to us. So we've got accounts with every brand on the market, and we've also got a range of wholesalers that we can arrange supply through as well. So our basic position is, it doesn't matter what tyre you want or what tyre you need matched up, we can find it. It may take some time to ship in from interstate, or there might be a cost involved, you know, if it's something really rare that you're trying to hunt down. But ultimately, we don't favour one over the other in terms of what we sell to the public.
You know, the funny thing about it, Lee, I mean, it's like you go buy a pair of shoes or you go buy a pair of sneakers and you go, you try them on, you go, yeah, they feel okay, but I don't like them. Yeah. Tires always, I've always had a question mark in my mind. I mean, when I've bought tires in the past, I usually have gone through bow repairs just to, I know they're your opposition, whatever, but and that's only because I worked for RACV and we got a discount and so forth, okay?
Yeah.
But I never actually said I want that particular tire. I've never said I want that particular tire because I didn't know which tires were best for my car. I'd actually ask him what would be the best tires. And I don't know why one tire is actually better than the other. Can you explain that? What the difference?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we work on essentially a good, better, best type option. So if you as a customer give us a call, you're not sure what you're looking for, you know you need a new set of tires, we'll normally run you through three different options. So you'll have a budget option, a mid-range option, and then a premium pro. For the most part, there's a bit of a misconception that a more expensive tire is going to get you significantly more kilometers out of it. You will get more kilometers out of a premium brand and a premium price tire. But the difference between a premium price tire and a budget price tire in terms of longevity is not significant. Provided you're maintaining your tires in terms of inflation, you're getting them rotated, you know, when you get your car serviced, generally as a good rule, you're going to get mostly the same lifespan out of them. The big difference between tires is the quality. The big difference is the quality of the product. So when you're talking about things like safety, you're talking about things like handling, grip, wet weather performance, road noise, these sorts of issues, that's where the differences between your budget brand tire and your premium brand tire become significant.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, okay, that's good to know because I've always wondered why they recommend one tire above another tire. I always seem to have gone for these sports tires. I don't know why, because that's what they keep saying works best for the car. Yep. The other big question I've always had, and students ask this all the time, is pressure, air pressure. How much pressure do you put in a tire? Because other people say like 32 PSI, some do 34, 35, 36. And I suppose it depends on what you're going to be using it for. I mean, I remember actually going in the desert on a four-wheel drive, and they actually take the air out of the tires so that the car can roll through the desert.
Yes. Yep.
So how do you know what PSI you should put in your how much air pressure you put in your tire?
Yep. Fantastic question. The easiest answer to that is if you go to your car and you open up the driver's side door, there's a little placard on the inside of the driver's door.
Okay.
And that will show you the different tires that car had standard option. So there might be three or four different size tires that vehicle would be manufactured with. And generally as part of that, it will have the recommended PSI next to that as well.
Oh, wow.
So I'll say if you've taken the...
I'm going to go check that myself. I didn't know.
That's it. So it might be, you know, we'll use an example. They're no longer going to be made, unfortunately, but say a Holden Commodore. You buy a new Commodore, you get it with, as a standard, it would come with an 18-inch rim. It may say it's a 34 PSI requirement is what they recommend on that tyre. You buy that exact same car, but you get the 20-inch sports, mag wheel upgrade. It might recommend a 31 PSI or a 32 PSI instead. So we, in terms of Mobile Tyre Shop, as a rule of thumb, we will just follow that tyre placard. Okay. If you have gone out and purchased a set of aftermarket rims and you've got something completely different that's off the manufacturer, normally there will be a range on those PSIs. And as a standard, we would set it to 2 PSI above the minimum recommendation. So if the size recommendations are giving you anything between 31 and 36 PSI, we'd set it to around 33, 34.
Okay. Are there certain tires that you wouldn't put on a car? Like, I mean, you see people with big mag tires and you're thinking, are they safer? Are they not safer? I mean, smaller rims. I mean, that's a question mark in my mind all the time as well, too, as an instructor. You know, what is the safest tire? I mean, how can you tell?
Yeah. So there are a lot of generalities in terms of performance and that sort of thing. As I said, generally speaking, the more you pay for a product, the better quality of product you're going to get, the better performance you're going to get out of it. There are specific brands, and I mean, I don't want to get too far into, I guess, what each brand does better than the other, but particularly brands that are made for the European market. So things like Continental and Michelin, they tend to be very soft, very sticky tyres. So they're going to get a lot more grip. So if someone's looking for a safe tyre, we want to look at a softer compound tyre, a tyre that is going to be a little bit stickier and a little bit grippier. And the offset to that, and what we explain to our customers, is the offset to that is you are going to get a shorter lifespan out of the tyre. As it's gripping more, the tyre is going to be degrading quicker. It's going to be breaking down further. So you might end up getting, you know, 2, 5, 10,000 less kilometres than you did out of the budget brand tyres that you bought last time. But you're reducing your stopping distance by, you know, tens of metres, which is a huge change in terms of the performance of the vehicle.
That's massive.
Yeah,
that's interesting. But that grip, is that for wet weather as well? Is that what you're saying? Is it better for wet weather, or is it?
So that's all the time. So one of the biggest complaints. One of the biggest concerns that we have from customers, particularly with high end premium vehicles, you know, things like, you know, your Mercedes CLKs and these sorts of cars, is they'll ring up and I say, look, I bought a set of Continentals and they didn't last me at all. I don't want them again. You know, what else have you got? And we then, I guess, have to educate the customer and let them know, look, the reason that you're not getting the life out of them is because of the way the tire's manufactured. You know, the rubber compound is specifically made to break down quicker because the tires are made for these performance vehicles, so that as you're getting up to speed and slowing down quicker, you're not having the car slide along. It's going to stop. But the offset to that is, as I said, the tire breaks down, the rubber falls apart, you need to replace them sooner.
Mm. So the average Joe Blow, does he get a good tire, or does he get a... I mean, that's a big question, because, I mean, most people are looking to reduce their cost, obviously. I mean, like, even myself as a driving instructor, I had a set of tyres that went up to 80,000 Ks, and they were impressed at how long they lasted. But, you know, and I was happy that they lasted 80,000, but they were only recommending like 40 to 50,000 Ks on them. But they did last 80,000. It was brilliant for me.
And they're sort of the, I guess, the two things I ask about is, number one, how much is it going to cost? And number two, how long is it going to last? And the thing that we're the customer is, obviously we want to work within your budget. You know, not everybody is looking to buy a high-end performance set of tires. You know, most people are just looking to get to work and back every day, and that's all they need their car to do. You're going to have plenty of budget options that are going to more than do that job. You know, they're still going to get the car from A to B. They're going to be fine in handling and grip and performance and that sort of stuff for your everyday driving. Where, as I said, the difference is if you can afford it, or if you are happy to put in that little bit extra, you're going to get a significant increase. And so there's a lot of different things you can compare it to. You know, you mentioned about, like, you go and buy a pair of shoes. There's a big difference between a $20 pair of Velcro runners at Kmart as opposed to buying a pair of $250, you know, Reebok Sport. And when you go out running on the track, you're going to notice that difference.
Just another thing, I mean, like, say someone comes in and says, look, I want the safest tire there. Does that mean you're going to give him the most expensive, or does that mean you're going to look at his car and say, look, these are the recommended tires and that's the safest for you? or you say, look, if you do want to spend a bit more, these are going to be actually a little bit safer, but you're not going to get the same wear and tear. What do you say? Because, I mean, for me personally, because I've got kids driving it all the time, I would say, Lee, I want the safest tyres available. I know if it costs me a little bit more, I don't mind, but as long as they're going to be safe.
Yeah, absolutely. And so this is where we go back to, you know, that good, better, best thinking. So our discussion with the customer is along the lines of, okay, well, what is it that you're looking to get out of your tyres? You're looking for safety, you're looking for fuel efficiency, you're looking for longevity, or are you just working on a budget? What's sort of the most important thing for you in terms of how we can help? So you're looking for the safest tyre on the market. Depending on the size of the tyre and the car that you're driving, so on that, I'd also then say, look, if that is something that's outside of your budget, we can then look at the next level down. And so generally speaking, again, without going into specifics on brand, you know, sport tyre, again, because you're just going to get the grip, you're going to get that performance out of it. And then there'd be one or two budget brands that we might have available that do a sports option as well that we could look at for you. But that's where we... From our point of view, there isn't any one single tyre solution for any customer, because what works for person A doesn't always work for person B. You know, different vehicle, different driving environments, different budgets, it's all different. And that's where, you know, having the advantage of, you know, being connected with every major brand in the market, it means that if there's something that you want specifically, we can get it. If you're open to suggestions, then we've got the entire market that we can work with to help you out.
I know that in Europe, I know like a place like Germany, they do like a 6 month, because when I lived overseas for a while, I lived in Europe for about 8 years. And what happened is in winter, you wear one sort of set of tyres, you got a winter tyre, and then you have a summer spring tyre. So you actually literally change your tyres over after 6 months. Do we do that here in Australia, or we just basically just wear the one? Obviously, I know we normally wear the one tyre, but does that mean that that one tyre can take you up into the mountains, in the snowy mountains, or you just basically wear your chains just to protect you for that?
Yeah, for the most part, anyone that's taking their car up in the snow or off-road, you know, that's generally aware of the change that they need to make in their tyres. So we'll have customers ring us simply to do a strip and fit of tyres that they already have. So we might have the same customer call us, as you said, every 6 months, or generally it's sort of about now, especially through Queensland. We get a lot of customers call up wanting us to fit all-terrain or mud tyres onto their vehicle, because, you know, they're living, you know, in farming areas or, you know, rural areas where there's a lot of dirt roads, or they're planning on taking the car, you know, up bush for a weekend, that sort of thing. And so we're more than happy to accommodate that. We don't sort of have that recommendation or that normal swap over of tyres, just because the weather here is fairly unpredictable. Yeah. For the most part, it's warm in summer and it's wet in winter. But, you know, I mean, we look at the summer that we just had now with the amount of rain that we got was, you know, nobody could have seen that coming. So, for the most part, when we fit a set of tyres for a customer, that customer is usually expecting that set of tyres to be on there, you know, consistently for a few years.
Tell me something. I mean, one thing that's always annoyed me heaps is speed humps. And speed humps, at shopping centres, they've got them all down the streets now. I know what they're there for. Obviously, they're to slow the car down, which is a good thing. Unfortunately, they need to put them in there to slow the cars down. How does that affect the tyres? I mean, because I know it affects the shockers, definitely. Yep. Are tyres designed for that type of treatment? Or is it... Because, I mean, you see the tyres, like, if you slightly parking on the curb or something, the tyre just goes in, but it's the same amount of air in it. So how does that affect the tyre? Do they affect the tyres at all, the speed humps and that sort of stuff?
If you're driving over the speed hump as intended, you shouldn't have any issues. So this is...
A little bit too fast or whatever.
Yeah, that's it. So this is connected to the question before about PSI and inflation on the tyres. Yeah. And this is where people can run into trouble by overinflating their tyres. Because if you've overinflated your tyres, you're not going to have that cushioning and you don't have that give. That speed hump or a gutter at any kind of speed, that's when you can cause problems with your tyres. So, you know, a common thing that people talk about is egging on their tyres because they've hit a gutter or they've hit a speed bump or something and they haven't done what they were supposed to do and slowed down and driven over it properly. And that's caused a ripple in the rubber that's caused some damage internally to the structure of the tire. And so the air is trying to escape now out of a new pocket, which is what causes that bubble. For the most part though, if you slow down, drive over the speed hump as you're supposed to, it shouldn't make any difference to your tires.
If you get egging, can you fix that or is that just the tire's gone?
Nah, once you get that, and I guess this is a good time to, I guess, talk about the structure of a tyre.
Yeah.
Because the internals of a tyre now, it's not, the rubber is not one solid piece. There's multiple plies of rubber. So you have all different levels of rubber stacked on top of each other and pressed together. So that's where we talk about, you know, things like the difference between a car tire and a truck tire and a heavy truck tire and that sort of thing. A lot of the differences in how that tire is made is how many layers of rubber have they got stacked on top of each other. So what happens with egging is when the vehicle hits something at speed, one of those split apart. And so now there's a gap internally in the structure of the tire. And so the air that's filled the tire is now trying to fill that gap as well, because there's an escape point. And that then causes the bulge because it's thinking that there's a way out. The air is trying to force its way out of there. Once that happens, there's no way for us to repair that, unfortunately. If you get an egg on your tire, we need to replace it immediately, because if that splits, if you run into any issues, you go over a pothole, you hit another speed bump, you know, heaven forbid you pick up a nail or a pin or something that pops it, then you're in a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm. What sort of guarantees do you give on tyres? Do you give any guarantees on tyres?
Yep. So every tyre in Australia is covered by a 5-year manufacturer's warranty. Oh, so wow. On every tyre, it's what we call a manufacturing stamp. So it's a 4-digit number. Mm-hmm. So it might be something like, say, 4818. Manufactured in the 48th week of 2018. And so 5 years from that date, the manufacturer guarantees that tyre. So if there's any issues in terms of, you know, it's cracking, the tyre splits or anything like that, and it's not through driver fault. So again, as long as you're not hitting that speed bump too quickly, then the manufacturers will look after you and they'll cover that. In terms of what we do from Mobile Tyre Shop, we guarantee all of our work. So we do all the fitting, all the balancing. We obviously need to look after your vehicle. You know, we're talking about, you know, you getting you from home to work or school or anything safely and in care. And so we need to make that vehicle. It's in better condition than when we left it. Because obviously we're putting a new set of tyres on there, we've inflated them, we've balanced them. Even the tyres that we don't fit, we will go around and rotate and balance if needed at the time of fitting. And we want to make sure that when we walk away from that, it's happened and you're happy with how the vehicle drives. If for whatever reason there's any issues, and we have this happen, that a customer will call us up and say, hey, look, you guys came out and fit a tyre. I noticed that when I drive, there's a bit of shaking, or I noticed that it feels like it's pulling to one side, that sort of thing. Can you come and have a look? Free of charge, we'll come back out on site. We'll double check it. Maybe that, you know, we've missed something the first time around. It may be that, you know, in the interim couple of days, something's changed, you know, but we will always go out and look after the customer and make sure that they're happy and that they're safe.
So you actually do wheel alignment as well, or?
At this stage, we can't.
Okay.
The technology for it, we are trialing it at the moment. So there's about 40 vans that we have nationally. I forgive me, I don't have the specifics. This is the sort of stuff that that you're going to be best to speak with Travis about when you have him on. He'll have all these figures. But I do know that in Sydney we have one or two of the mobile alignment setups. Normally, when we go out there, we can still test for the alignment and we can let the customer know if an alignment is required and obviously then, you know, recommend that they go install somewhere to get that done. We would love to be able to do it for everyone all the time. It's just something where the technology to do that just isn't where we want it to be. And so we just keep testing it, keep moving forward with it. And, you know, once it's up and running, it'll be in every van and it's something we'll be able to do without a hassle.
That'd be brilliant. Just see motorbikes being part of it as well at some point or
is... Look, yes and no. That's probably more a question for Travis. I know in my early days when I first started, I thought that it would be an idea to have a van outfitted with just the motorbike equipment and to just be servicing motorbikes. I don't know what the market on that looks like in terms of the number of inquiries that we would normally get about motorbikes. Mm-hmm. I don't see why we wouldn't be able to do it one day. Far off that day is.
Tell me something. You got a customer and you've seen that his tyres are really worn out. Yep. And obviously he gets new tyres and so forth. And, I mean, you're experienced enough to say, well, look, this guy's either driving it badly or he's driven it for too long. And for his safety, what do you actually say to him? What would you say to him? Like, how do you say to him, like, look, I can see that it's, there's a problem here, there's a problem there. You've got to drive a little bit slower, brake a little bit earlier. What do you do? How do you sort of, do you sort of give him some guides like that when you...
Yeah, and a lot of that conversation happens with our technicians out in the field. It is very much a case-by-case basis. We do have a couple of repeat customers that we sort of know internally in the office. We go, oh, yep, okay, here he goes. He needs another set. Mm-hmm. And those are the sorts of customers where, you know, early days, yes, you've had that conversation with them. You ask the question, you know, what are you doing with the vehicle? You know, where are you taking it? What sort of driving are you doing? Can we potentially look at another tyre maybe that's going to give you a better performance than what you're getting at the moment? For the most part, though, our customer base is very much, you know, working class, middle class, mum and dad at home, getting the kids to and from school. They're not really pushing the vehicles. They're not, you know, they're not thrashing their car up and down the streets. Where we sort of talk about, you know, driving style and how to maintain the vehicle is through, as I said, you know, keeping your tyres inflated. You know, personally for me, every other time you fill up with petrol, so usually it might be once a month, whatever it is, when you're at the petrol station, take it around to the air machine, top them up, double check them. You know, if you find that you're having one tyre that you're consistently having to inflate, potentially there's a leak there that needs to get looked at, you know, and then you can give us a call and we can come around and check that out for you. And again, when you're getting your car serviced, whether you do that through your normal mechanic or whether you then give us a call to come and do that for you, get your tyres rotated, you know, rotating them every 5,000, 6,000, 8,000 kilometres, massive increase on the life of the tyres and the performance that you're going to get out of them. But in terms of commenting on people's specific driving styles, it's very, very hard to do that on a one-off visit, you know, every couple of years.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Tell me something. Do you know braking distances? Like, what's a good braking distance and on speed and what, I mean, how long it takes to actually brake?
I'll be honest. I don't know those numbers off the top of my head. It's not something that I know. If I was at the office, I could certainly and talk about, you know, comparisons and that sort of thing. Yeah. But yeah, not off the top of my head, sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. And just one last question. So the tread, I mean, I saw your business card, which I think is brilliant. So you just stick that business card in the tread of the tire. And if it's at that red point, then you know that you need to get new tires. Or is that right? Is that how it works?
Yeah, that's it. So what we've done with that design is basically give people an at-home safety test. Excuse me. So with the card, that actually gives you that stopping distance that you were talking about.
Oh, okay, brilliant. Brilliant.
Now the red line is 1.6 mil.
Yeah.
And at that point the tire is actually legally unroadworthy and needs to be replaced. So if you took that to any mechanic worth his salt for a roadworthy certificate, that tire would fail and you would need to replace it.
Fair enough.
Our recommendation is once it hits the yellow, get them replaced. So it's about 2 mil. Mm-hmm. Once your tire hits 2 mil tread, look at getting them replaced. Mm-hmm. If someone at home, doesn't have a copy of our business card and they wanted to check, tires these days are manufactured with a marker. So what you can actually do is if you get your finger and put it into the tread grooves of the tire and you run your finger around the tire, you'll feel a little ridge. You'll hit a little ridge. And that's the manufacturer's point of replacement.
Oh, wow.
So they actually build that in to say, okay, once it gets to this level, you need to swap them out. Most of the manufacturers have that somewhere between 2 to 3 mil of tread left. So normally, obviously, they're being conservative. Their primary focus is on making sure that the vehicle's safe. So generally speaking, you'll get a little bit more life than what those markers have got on there. But if anyone ever needs to double check, whether or not, if they're not sure, and they want to double check, how far off they are off, from needing a replacement, it's a great little at-home test that all the major brands now put in their tires.
That's brilliant. That's great information. Just tell me, so if someone is actually driving with really low tread, what are the dangers of it, firstly? What could happen? I mean, the thing that I always worry about, the tyre's going to burst. Like if you're doing a really fast speed, the tyre could burst. But what other things can happen?
Yeah, probably your biggest concern is your braking distance, the stopping distance on a vehicle.
Yeah.
The less tread that you've got on there, the harder it is for the tyre to stop you. I can't remember which brand it was, and I don't want to name names because I'm not sure. There was an ad that was put out not too long ago that shows that as your tyres are rolling along, it's about a handprint worth of grip that's got you on the road and is stopping you from crashing your car. And so when you think about how little contact there is with your vehicle and the road, how heavy the car is, and how fast it's traveling, the more grip you can have to stop you and make sure that you don't have those accidents is massive. So that's really the biggest problem with driving on tyres that are low on tread is, even at, your normal suburban speeds, you're driving at 50, 60 kilometres an hour. The differences in braking distance are huge. So, I'll pop up the card again. So we're talking 80 kilometres here. So at 80 kilometres, the difference between that green line and that red line is about 15 metres. So it's almost 50, 50%.
Wow.
Which is a huge difference when you're talking of 2 millimetres of grip.
Yeah. Well, that's actually good information to know, actually, because I didn't know that information. So that's great to know. It'd be good for people to hear that and understand that they need to have good tread on their tyres. Hey, as a company, I reckon you're doing a great job there, Lee. I really do. I think it's a great idea, and it's great to have people that can come to your home, especially with the way people are working today. It's just everyone's so busy and so forth. And like you said, I think you were telling me the other day, that you can even go to their office. You don't even have to see yep. them or whatever. They can, you know, like my wife works in a hospital. You could just say, yeah, we'll roll up at the hospital, just get in there, get your tires done, and then you, you know, just pay online or whatever, and it's all done. It's fantastic. I reckon that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about, is that convenience, you know. More and more people are, you know, looking to do more things with their day. The last thing that anybody wants is, you know, and we've all been there, and I'm you know, I'm only 32, but I'm still old enough, I guess, to times where, you know, the car needs some work done. You've got to drop it off in the morning, and, you know, they might have half a dozen cars lined up, and is yours 8 o'clock? Is it going to get done at 10 o'clock? Is it going to get done at half past three? And so you don't know. And then you've got to plan your whole day around potentially not going into work, or how am I going to get home if the car's not ready to go, or who's going to give me a lift back to pick it up, all of that sort of stuff. It is, from a convenience point of view, it's I'd never thought of it before, you know, hearing about the company or joining the company. But it is, it's brilliant. And we see the same thing with, you know, mobile mechanics, mobile batteries.
I found the feather and I washed it, and I named it Baby.
Very good. All right, can you hop out for me and call his little... Sorry, mate. little ones.
That's cute.
But yeah, so we've seen it with, you know, with mobile mechanics, mobile battery fitting. You know, we see a lot of the gyms franchises, it's all about convenience and that customer service. And ultimately, that's what we're looking to do, is provide that same service, that same, you know, customer experience of being able to just get on with your day and live your life and not have to, you know, hang around at a tire shop or, you know, nag your mates for a lift because, you know, you haven't got your car. So
have you guys got any competitors in the industry, or are you basically the number one?
There are one or two other smaller companies. So we have, up until 10 o'clock in the morning, we have a 48-hour service guarantee generally. But up until 10 o'clock in the morning, you can normally reserve a same-day booking. We're open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. 7 days a week, you can make a booking online. We're open for a phone call on the weekends.
Fantastic.
Give us a call. We've got, as I said, there's about 40-odd vans nationwide. So we've always got room. We've always got spots. There's always a way for us to be able to service you. It might not be, you know, immediate and on the spot, but we can, you know, there's always a next available booking ready to go, and we can get a technician wherever you are. That's the, you know, the beauty of being mobile is, you know, it's not just a one and done situation in terms of availability. Using Melbourne as a prime example, you know, I live in Cranbourne, I work in Keysborough, I've got family closer to the city. If I needed my tyres done, I call up this morning. It could be that, you know, the next available appointment in Cranbourne is at 4 o'clock tomorrow. But if I'm at work and I'm in Keysborough, Dandenong area, well, they might be able to do it at 2:30. And then that changes that, you know, that variable. If I wanted to go and have dinner with mum and, you know, head in closer to the city, the technician working that area might not have anything on for tomorrow morning. And so he can get it done, you know, first thing in the morning. And, you know, I can go have lunch with my mum and get tyres done out the front of the cafe at the same time. And then get on with the rest of my day. And that's, you know, that's the beauty of being mobile, is it doesn't matter where you are or what you're doing. We can find a time that fits you and come and get it done.
Fantastically. And just one last thing, what would you want to say to people driving out there to keep themselves safer? Firstly, regarding tyres, and just generally what you see out on the road and what you think is the biggest issue out on the road or something.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, in terms of tyres specifically, look after them. It's the same as any other part of the car. You know, you check your oil, you check your water, you fill it up with petrol all the time, checking your tyre. It's a 2-minute job. And as we saw with the, you know, the stopping distances that we flashed up before, you're talking about, you know, 30, 40, 50% better performance out of your tyres for a 2-minute job every couple of weeks, checking your tread, checking your air pressures, making after your tyres. because that's what's going to stop the car when you need it to stop really quickly. In terms of general drive, I'll be honest, my biggest pet peeve is people tailgating on the freeways.
Yeah, they do it a lot, don't they? It's crazy. I hate it as well.
That's it. I've always said, you know, if people left more distance between them and the car in front of them, everyone would get where they needed to go a lot quicker. It'd make merging so much easier. It'd make changing lanes so much easier. I know we have a recommendation. I think I'm trying to go back to my driving lessons. I think the recommendation is 3 car lengths. You'd be able to tell me that.
Yeah, well, 3. We go with seconds rather than car lengths because you can't measure the car length. So we usually say on a normal road, anything between 60 to 80 or any speed up to 80, you go for a 2-second gap. So what that means is you allow the car in front to pass any mark, a landmark that you choose, and you just count it down. But you don't count 1, 2. You sort of go 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi. But 3 seconds is good. And then on freeways, 3 seconds and above. So you need that sort of gap also in front of you, but you also need it behind you as well. The one behind you is the hardest one to create. If people tailgate and there's 3 other lanes next year and they won't go in that lane. And you think, if you're in that much of a hurry, just go in the other lane. And then they leave their lane change way too late as well. I see it every time. I know what you're saying. Yeah, I totally agree with that.
I saw a brilliant video years ago, and you may know it, or if not, I'll see if I can find it and send it to you. It was a study they did over in the US about zipper merging. So the idea of, you know, 1 car on the freeway, then 1 car on the ramp, 1 car on the freeway, 1 car on the ramp, coming onto the freeway, because the biggest congestion issues that they had over there were caused at on-ramps, at merger points where cars were coming off. And the 2 things that they came up with out of that study was, one, that the people looking to merge onto the freeway needed to come up to speed quicker. It's a big issue with people, you know, being overly cautious about their speed. And they likened it to a plane on a runway. And they said people need to get the idea in their head that if you get to the end of that runway and you're not up to speed, there's a very good chance you're going to have an accident.
Yeah.
And the second thing that they highlighted was in terms of the spaces that got left by the people driving on the freeway, and they changed it from, I think it was like a 3-car length to a 6-car length. Yeah. They still had everyone doing 60 miles an hour, but because of that increased space, it meant that the people merging onto the freeway had a clear gap that they could roll into. So there was no need to feather the brakes. There was no need to sort of do that double head check and, you know, oh, is there a gap? Is there not a gap? Are they going to let me in? Are they not going to let me in? There was definitely a gap there. Get up to speed, roll onto the freeway, keep going. And then everybody just, you know, move back a little bit to accommodate the new vehicle on the road.
That would be brilliant if they did that, Lee, but people just don't do that.
That's it. And it's my biggest pet peeve is everybody trying to get those extra 2 or 3 seconds to get where they're going by sitting right up the back of the car in front of them. And it's just not needed. You know, sit back, relax, enjoy the music, listen to your podcast, put on an audio book. If it takes you another 5 minutes to get where you're going, then it takes another 5 minutes.
I just try to tell people, just stay out of the rat race. Let them go out there. You see them fighting in amongst themselves. One's trying to get the other's trying to get out the front. And you can still do the 70, 80, 100, whatever it is back here. And you're always going to meet up with them at the same point.
Yeah.
And they're going to be stressed. And you're just going to be relaxed, just looking at them going, yeah, man, that was good.
But, that's it.
You know when you said about getting speed to get on the freeway for your merging? Yeah, a lot of people say that to me, but there's one thing that I need to add to that. I agree with what you're saying. I don't disagree with what you're saying. But you do need to adjust that according to what is actually happening on the freeway. So, for example, if it's
peak, absolutely.
If it's peak traffic in the morning, the cars traveling on that freeway are not doing 100. Even though the ramp says reach 100, those cars are only doing 60. So people behind can't be going, come on, get your speed up. I get another one where people say, you're pulling off to turn right at a street, for example, and there's a little gap in a road, you know, so you can pull in. And people expect you to keep doing 80 whilst you're entering that, but you can't. You've actually got to slow down a little bit earlier so you can enter it safely. There's a lot of things that happen on the road, lots and lots and lots of things that happen on the road. The one thing that I have to say, which I'll just add into what you've said about everything you said, as the road minders, we have four things that we always say to everyone: look ahead, think ahead, plan ahead, and act ahead. The think ahead is one of the most important things, which people don't do. The look ahead is looking in front of you, looking behind you, beside you, above you, below you, everywhere. Look ahead, think ahead. Think about what's happening on the road and think about your car. Think about, are my tyres safe enough? If I've only got that little bit of tread and I'm racing onto the freeway at 100 and I got to stop, I'm not going to be able to stop.
Yep,
plan your trip. You plan your trip before you leave. So, for example, you're going to get to work. You leave heaps earlier to get to work so you can make sure you've got plenty of time and you don't panic and be safe. But actually, as you're driving, you're planning your trip at the same time because you're looking around to see what's going on, if people are thinking it. Act ahead. Don't leave it to the last minute. Plan it, act it, and prepare yourself way before you get there and you stay safe. So that's what it's all about. So think ahead, get good tyres, go to Mobile Tyre shop and get good tyres and get good service, and that's what it's all about. Hey, Lee, thanks a lot for today. I really appreciate it. It sort of puts me in a better set as to what your company does, but it's also helped me relax a little bit with it as well too, because basically it's the first time I'm going to be doing it, but I'm excited about it, really excited about it.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a lot of fun with it. You might be interested in coming on another time as well. We can just have a little bit of a chat about different things about safe driving. And this show that I'm producing at the moment, which we're creating, is going to go a lot of other places. It's to do with travel. It's going to go to air balloons. It's going to go to flights. It's going to go on trains, trams. You're driving to the train station. People don't think enough about the road. They don't think about the whole plan, the whole travel situation, and how to keep themselves safe. Is your internet okay? Yeah, mine's just saying unstable there for a minute.
No, I'm okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to go into all of that as well too. So we're going to take the, you know, someone that's coming from home and they're going to get to work or get to wherever they're getting safely, whatever way they're doing it, you know.
Yeah.
And it could be a fun trip as well too. It could be on a motorbike, could be on, like I said, air balloons, on a bicycle, all sorts of things. I mean, cyclists. Cyclists are an issue on the roads. I don't know how you feel about them, but you know, you've got to have your distance from them. And then my issue with them is that they drive in a straight line, and all they do is go in one straight line, and they don't think about all the rest of it, and they just try to get up to speed. And you've got to deal with them rather than them having to deal with you as well too. I know what you think about cyclists. What do you think about cyclists?
This is a dangerous question. Paul Williams, he used to be the GM over at Spalding, was a massive road cycling fan, raced semi-professionally. So he's probably sitting on the other side of the fence to this. look, I think that there's absolutely a place for it. Obviously, you and I have, you know, got fitness goals, and we've done some work and that sort of thing. And I think everybody needs to find, you know, a way of keeping fit and healthy that engages them and that, you know, they're invested in.
Sure.
I would like to see a little bit more regulation about how the group rides are organized and coordinated. I do think that at times, you know, especially, you know, like down where I am, you drive through Cranbourne and it's fine. You know, you drive through Dandenong for the most part, it's fine. You hit the Nepean Highway along the beach, though, especially on a weekend. And that entire left-hand lane is essentially gone because you've got, you know, a group of 30, 40, 50 cyclists all out together.
And then you've got the guy driving behind you that's in a hurry to get past you, and he doesn't realize why you're going a bit slower. And that's where it's dangerous as well.
Yeah, and so I'm not sure, and look, I'm not an expert on it, so I don't know what the sort of the legalities or the road rules or the, you know, the cans and can'ts about that are. I think some sort of limitation or some sort of guideline about, you know, how many can be in that cluster or how many people can be sort of in that group and the distances that they should be keeping are probably needed. But, you know, for the most part, you know, they're road users, they're people that, you know, when you're driving in a car, I think the thing to keep in mind is that if there's an accident, you're probably going to be okay. The person on the bike is, you know, someone to look out for and someone to be careful around. It's just, I guess, putting a bit more onus on, you know, the best way to put it, I guess, is that a cyclist is fine. A couple of cyclists, no issue. It's once you start getting those larger groups all riding together, that's where I think problems come up.
Okay, fantastic. Well, we can close it up there. That was brilliant, Lee. That was absolutely brilliant.
No worries, mate.
I hope you...
Thank you very much.
No, thank you. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed that. That was great.
So that concludes our show for today. Thank you all for listening in. We look forward to presenting our next podcast to you very soon. Take care, and let's build a better world together.